Welcome to the WJBM Outdoor Show, brought to you by Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville. We're coming to you from the WJBM studios in Jerseyville, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I'm Aaron Quillen. I operate Monarch Rivers, where the mission is simple: kill big deer. Today, returning guest, many times over, world champion of the world, waterfowl hunting legend, and all around just superstar and a great guy, a guy that I'm proud to call my good buddy, Cole Foyles.
Hey, what's up, buddy?
Dude, thanks.
We're back for episode 8 or 9 now. We've lost count.
Dude, we're killing it.
Oh yeah.
Well,
absolutely.
We it's not officially over until we get the Cole Foyles waterfowl update.
Yeah, we as of, I don't know, 4:40 something tonight, we wrapped up on another duck season. So it I'm sure in a few days we'll be missing it, but it's kind of a relief right now, getting everything picked up, duck decoys put away in the shed, and get ready for the next season. Got geese coming up.
Right. Of the 60 days, how many days were you out?
I was probably out a good 45-50, I would say. I'm going to have to say probably 50 at least. I took a couple of days here and there to deer hunt, but not a lot. But yeah, it was a long, hard grind. I wouldn't say it was a record book year, but, you know, I did the numbers tonight in the book, and it wasn't the worst by no means. And I mean, numbers aren't everything, but you like to keep track how year to year goes. And it was kind of neat. Like, some blinds that shined in the past didn't do so good, and then some of our quote-unquote gar hole blinds, what I would call, did really well. So shot a lot of variety of ducks. You always wish for if you could have a better year, this and that, but it really wasn't that bad.
As the way it started out, from my understanding, ended up much better than it started.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get into. I will say the first week of duck season was by far the worst duck season I've ever seen. For start to a duck season I've ever seen. I mean, it was like hunting dinosaurs.
Okay.
It was something to see a few. I got a blind. I opened up our weekend. If worse come to worse and we don't have a lot of ducks in the area, you can about guarantee your limits of wood ducks in there.
Okay.
And we shot every wood duck we saw opening weekend, and that was 2.
Oh, my gosh.
It was just like, when is this going to give? And as the season went on, it got better. It got better and better. Usually in the past, or at least in the past few years, November's good, and then we die off in December. It was kind of the opposite, honestly. I mean, when December kicked in, we started kicking her in high gear. We had some good November hunts, but it took a little. It was probably later November before we started killing them.
Okay.
All in all, it was fun.
What was there any part of the season that really kind of stood out opposed to any other?
You know, when we got them little colds, we had that little cold spell there when things were icing up. I hunted the river a lot this year. I kind of aborted mission from a lot of our river bottom spots. Well, I mean, we hunted them a little.
Yeah.
But I hunted that river really hard, and river's a lot more work, and you got to really know it. And the river, that one thing about that river, the river don't care about nobody or any of your gear.
Mm-hmm.
But it paid off. And when it got cold, what'll happen is all them bottom ground potholes and refuges and stuff they're using, you know, flooded corn impoundments, whatever, they all freeze up. And where's the open water? The river. So
yeah.
It's kind of cool going back from like your youth to when it gets cold nowadays. You're getting to see what ducks used to be like on the river on a daily, but it's just when it gets cold now, you know, they got to go back and ducks got to be a duck again out there. So it's pretty cool. And I'm going to tell you one thing cool about that river. You can shoot 10 bunches and maybe kill 10 varieties of ducks. You got all your divers. You got your puddle ducks. I mean, you wouldn't believe the amount of green-winged teal we kill out in the river. A green-winged teal is known as like a sheet water or a pothole duck. We shoot a lot of them out there. But the Diver, especially in December, they're just so pretty. I couldn't tell you how many clients I had this year took wall hangers home, you know,
okay,
whether it was a bull can or a mallard drake, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we had them covered. And then we shot a decent amount of geese in December, too, and I'm looking forward to getting into that in here in January. So,
yeah.
Yeah, no, we had a lot of fun. That river, though, it really paid off this year.
Awesome. So when you're hunting on the river, you're hunting private, which is a little bit different than the public blind mm-hmm. setup around here. You don't really have to meet any standards of blinds. Not that the standards are real difficult to meet, but no. Are you able to get a little bit more flexibility, or is there anything?
I mean, if you want to, like in our pool for our state blinds, you can only hunt four guys a day maximum.
Yeah.
I mean, this is all private, so if we want to build a 10-man blind, we can. But it's kind of unique out there because if you're not from here, you'd think the river is just open game to anybody. Well, a lot of the islands are, you know, privately owned, so you still either got to have permission or lease it or own it or whatever. But you can build like a permanent blind on post out there. But the problem is you're probably going to build another one next year and another one next year because the river just takes them out in the floods. So what we do, we've bought old pontoon boats.
Yeah.
Stripped them and then built blinds on them.
Okay. So,
and what's nice about that too, once again, going back to how the river does a lot of damage, after duck season's over, we'll drag those blinds in and put them on a trailer and get them on the mainland, and you know they're there next year, you know.
Right.
So a little more work, you know, dragging them in and out, brushing them, maintaining everything. But honestly, like with decoys out there too, we're using bigger weights, whether it's a big lead weight or I do a lot of concrete weights, but I make them out of solo cups. They're bigger. And then we run string lines, like trot lines, too.
Yeah.
So, and we got a lot of clips that goes on those lines. So, but every day, if you just, you know, when it gets slow, if you go out there and kind of do a little decoy maintenance, 15, 20 minutes a day, you can kind of keep up with your spread. But if you let, you know, if you wait a few days, you're going to have a mess out there because you're constantly fighting current.
Okay. And then with the current, so this is something I've always wondered about. You know, we got the one piece of property on the river.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when you go to set up and you got your dog and, you know, fetching birds, you've got some current to worry about.
Yeah.
So how do you manage it or mitigate that?
By working your dog in current?
Yeah.
So, I mean, as a dog owner, if your dog's never been on the river, that's, I mean, you get, I'm not going to lie, it's just instinct. You're going to get a little nervous about it. But them dogs, after a couple retrieves, figure that out. But if you can signal your dog or send your dog on a line, it's kind of like leading a duck. So say you knock a duck north above you.
Yeah.
Well, current flows south. So send your dog straight out. And by that time that duck floats down, he's going to meet that duck.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Now, if you knock five or six out of a bunch and you're in some heavier current, your dog's not going to get all five or six. You're going to have to go help him with the boat. You
okay.
know? So, but that dog, when you're shooting ones and twos and stuff, he's going to save you a lot of boat fuel if you added it up in the end.
Right.
But no, it's good work on them. Like I said, they got a lot more to fight against, you know?
Yeah. And you know, like a dog's going to be way more efficient because mm-hmm. when you're retrieving, you're not really hunting.
Mm-hmm. The only time I won't run a dog out there is like when we get a flood year, high water, heavier current, and you got a lot of trash coming down that river. So unless you're like in a backwater somewhere, I might leave him home for that. But like out there where we're at all year, we ran dogs 60 days out there. So,
okay.
So yeah, no. And that dog's going to be mad at you if he's got to stay home all duck season too.
Right.
And it's funny too, if you have like my younger dog, he's whistle signal. So when you hit a whistle to send them left or right, you know, they stop in place. Well, in the current, you go beep to stop him, to have him look at you and take a signal. It's almost comical because instead of him sitting in place, he stops, but the current's pushing him down to your right. So you're like, go, go, go. You got to hurry up. You got to be quick on it.
Right. Okay. So with the whistle signal, that's almost something that you do in training that kind of.
Yeah. Like when I do, for the viewer or the listeners that hasn't listened, I train dogs as well. So when I train dogs on whistles, I'll get them where they'll take hand signals, but I'm still going to throw them a lot of drills where they still got to find bumpers or ducks in the brush and stuff. I want a dog to be whistle trained, but I don't want him to be whistle dependent, because what happens is if they get too dependent on you and they're always looking back, they forget they got the main thing that you got them out there for, that nose to find a duck you can't see.
Yeah. Okay.
But no, it comes in handy. So like you knock a duck down, he's still got some life to him, where a whistle's nice too. This is just one little example. That duck will dive underwater, and if he's, especially the divers, like your river ducks, they'll stay under a while, and finally that dog might think, well, heck, he went to the right. Well, dog's swimming right and the duck's to the left. You can hurry up and hit that whistle and send him the right direction instead of him getting too far out of the way.
Okay. All right. And so that's almost like premeditated, like scenario driven. When you're thinking about your setup, when you're thinking about your training, these are all factors that
That's one thing that's nice. I feel like I can offer, because I'm also a guide and I've been out here my entire life and seen every freaking scenario. So when I'm training a dog, I'm trying to think as many little things as big things. So any situation that dog's in, he's ready for, you know, like I got one drill I call a butterfinger drill. I force fetch all my dogs, so they're going to hold these birds. But it's not unusual for a dog to come up a ramp and the duck, like he shake off and drop the duck, or the duck gets caught on the ramp and rips it out of his mouth. Well, I want to make sure that dog will go get that duck and bring it back up, so you're not having to get out and crawl through the brush. So what I'll do, the dog brings you the bumper and I'll hurry up. Oh, I'm all thumbs today, and I'll drop it down the ramp, and then he's got to make sure he'll go get it. And then oops, dropped it again and throw it in the brush. Like he's got to get it four or five times and just make sure that dog's prepared. Anything and everything, you know.
That's good thinking. Uh-huh. That's real good thinking. Now, with the river and the decoys, you mentioned, you know, constantly going out, just a little bit of time every day, even if you don't go hunt, just go adjust the decoys. Uh-huh. What other challenges does the river present for your decoying?
Man, you get those big wind days. That's the worst.
Okay.
Outside of ice. We had to deal with some ice this year, but I'll get into the wind too. I mean, those big rollers, even though those decoys got big weights, most of the time you got a hard sand bottom. Mm-hmm. So instead of sticking in the mud and holding in place, you get a big wave. Even if that decoy's got 10 foot of line, that wave's picking it up to 12 or 13 feet. So it's picking it up and moving your decoys and drifting them. Okay. That's why those trot lines are handy. They're all kind of buried in and stuck in place, but you got to fill in the gaps, or else every duck looks like he's swimming in a straight line. Okay. But then that wind will throw you for a curveball. And I'll tell you another thing, them floater blinds, we got them anchored, but that wind will play that blind where it's not set up right for how you got the decoys set. So you might have to go tighten a rope one day to turn the blind or do this or that. And let's not forget, you better know the river and be prepared to take on a few waves on the way out. We had some hairy boat rides this year, and make sure I'm going to say, make sure you got your life preservers, all your safety gear, and big water, big boat. I seen a thing, what was that, 2 weeks ago? There was some kids down in Alton. They had like a 12-foot boat trying to go out on Mississippi on one of them big wind days, capsized. They saved them, but it's like guys, sometimes it's just better if you ain't got the right gear or the right equipment, just stay home that day or go somewhere a little safer, you know?
Yeah. That river is nothing to mess with.
Like I always say it, and I've said it three times already, it don't care about anybody.
No. And then when you're talking about hunting the river and then Mother Nature, it's almost like two.
Oh, they blend together. They stir the pot. They stir the pot. Like I'll get into the ice now. Like we got that cold snap. And so the river is always nice. Like I was saying earlier, it'll everywhere freezes up and you got open water out there. Well, I guess with the river being so low and so many areas silted in anymore, with low water, it just seemed like that last cold spell overnight, it just dang near froze up. I mean, we were dodging icebergs getting out of there, but when we showed up to the blind, it was like, where's our decoy spread at? What happened was, is most of it, those decoys build up ice and get too heavy, and then they flip upside down, and then you get enough of them, and it all freeze together. So let the work begin. So there we are, back in a boat, in and out of the decoys, breaking the ice, and then you know, getting a hammer or whatever and busting ice off all the decoys. And what a guy does to kill a duck or a goose, I'm going to tell you.
So do you like, you got, I mean, tons of decoys. Do mm-hmm. you have... When you're looking at your decoys and how you're going to set up this year, do you have like, all right, these are for the river and then these are for the potholes or the inland?
Yeah. So like how I got them rigged, I was telling you, we got big, a lot longer lines and bigger weights for our river decoys. I keep them in a separate pile. Then we got small weights, you know, like your Texas rigs and stuff that'll go in the potholes and the river bottoms and stuff. But when setting a river spread too, I mean, like I said, it's a variety. You'll kill a little bit of everything, but I make sure I got a lot of color out on that river too.
Okay.
Like your bluebill decoys, your canvasbacks, golden eyes, all of that. So a lot of times you'll run what we call a diver line. It's just a straight line out front, 'cause them divers will take those lines. But you want to, like, I'll run a lot of pintails out there. Pintails are a lot of color. They see that in a lot of Canada goose decoys. Yeah, you're hunting ducks typically, but ducks like to mingle with the geese. And not only that, a goose decoy is bigger and it's got a lot of tail color on it. And not to mention the darkness too when they're over top.
Okay. So with all that vivid and that pop and the color that you mm-hmm. want, it's almost like you're going to have to run your newer decoys out in the river opposed to some of your older, more filler style decoys.
I mean, we do run some old fillers because let's just face it, time to time, you're probably gonna lose a decoy or two out there. But our divers, like a lot of our diver decoys and stuff, they're either, if they're older, they're the big American made G&H super mags. But we run a lot of we got a lot of new stuff out there too, and foam fill, because let's just face it, a diver's a tough duck and you're probably gonna have to put some extra shots on the water. So we ain't losing decoys, at least they can take the heat a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, good call.
Not to mention I'm taking guys out that might not be shooting the straightest on their 2 or 3 day hunt.
yeah you get all types, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's take a quick break, hear a word from the sponsors, we'll be right back.
There we go.
Welcome back to the WJBM Outdoor Show, brought to you by Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville. We're coming to you from the WJBM studios in Jerseyville, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I'm Aaron Quillen. I operate Monarch Rivers, where the mission is simple, kill big deer. For those of you just joining, world champion of the world, Cole Foyle's in the house. We were just talking about hunting the rivers opposed to river bottoms, some of the different things that went into it this year. And you know, what a diverse year, man.
Yeah.
You know, you've mentioned that you hunted a lot of different blinds in the rivers opposed to some of the river bottom stuff, but you also said to me earlier tonight something about your own personal hunting.
Like going into the season.
Yeah.
Yeah. I we were talking about this before we started. It was funny. Before I knew what this season was going to be like or anything, you know, we got multiple blinds, and that's a lot of work brushing them and getting them ready and everything. And it's funny. As many blinds as you have, you always got those one or two that feel like home. You know, like I'm camping out, see how many of this blind will kill. Well, this year I kind of went into it saying, you know what, I do all this work and hunt one or two blinds, I'm going to go test them all out. So, and honestly, it paid off in the end, but it was fun. I mean, and then on my off days, I mean, I got some buddies I helped brush blinds and get all their gear in and ready for. And I went and kind of just, you know, the guide got guided a couple of days, just went and chilled. And don't get me wrong, I pulled my own weight out there. It's my instinct.
Right.
But no, it was cool. I hunted all up and down the Mississippi River in the bottoms, different pools, you know, even on the Illinois a couple times. So yeah, no, it was cool just kind of getting to watch the world wake up from some different angles this year.
That's pretty sweet. Did you, you mentioned something earlier and I had seen it on probably your Snapchat. You had an interesting thing, an engagement.
Yeah. Yesterday we had a couple clients and, engaged couple. The guy called a couple days ago and, he wanted to propose to his girlfriend. Well, he had a duck band made up, said, "Will you marry me?" on it instead of the numbers. And yeah. So when they showed up that morning, I told him, I said, "I got my dog," like hinting, like without her knowing, "give me the band." So we got a duck killed and I sent my dog out. When he brought it in, I slipped the band on, was like, "Holy cow, it's banded. Look at this." So he come and got it, and he's like, "Oh my gosh, it is!" So he took it in. And he's like, "Honey, see what? Check it out!" And when she was looking at it, he hurried up and got down on the knee and popped the ring out. And yeah, I helped a couple get engaged.
That's pretty awesome out
on the river in a duck blind. Yeah,
that's one to remember.
Yeah, that was the first. It was pretty cool. It was pretty cool.
With where were they from?
Pike County.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they weren't okay. Very far. Both 23, just out of college. They went to college together and everything, they said, and they hunted like down in Carlisle. They went down to school somewhere down there. But anyway, they were just looking for a couple places to hunt. And they bought several calls off of us, big, you know, over the years, fans. And yeah, what a cool way to get engaged.
That is awesome.
Congrats to them.
Yeah, no doubt.
To the, I think last name, Future Musgrave. So if they hear this, congratulations.
That's awesome. Yes, congratulations. Awesome. All right. So with regard to like overall, one thing that I'm always curious to know in is breakdown. Did you see more geese, more ducks, less ducks, less geese? How did that kind of work out for you this year?
You know, it was just like spurts when we'd see, you know, more ducks or more ducks than geese. But I've seen several geese this year here in December. And a lot of that, too, being on the river, like we've been talking, is when it gets cold, they got to go find open water. But they got a couple of traditional little roosting spots. So it's fun, like, taking inventory. You know, I always carry a pair of binoculars. I sit across all glass up there, see how many's in. But I will say this year, versus a few, it was a steady trickle of divers all year. You know, it's usually traditionally like your ringnecks, few redheads or whatever come down, then you get a few spurts of bluebills, and then later you get all your canvasbacks, and then we always say when you start seeing the big swarms of golden eyes, the pot's getting about empty.
Okay.
But it just seemed like they kept trickling down all year, and we actually, so in Illinois, the first 45 days of duck season, you can shoot 2 bluebills per person per day. And then the last 15, you can only kill 1 per person per day. Boy, do I still wish it was 2 those last 15. Usually when we're about done shooting bluebills, we had a real nice push of them. And it was like, here comes a group. Everybody gets you one. Boom, 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 boom. Well, we're killed out on bluebills.
Right, right.
You know, but I'll tell you something else odd this year. Blue wing teal, we shoot those in September.
Yeah.
And then they're gone. And you might kill a few right there at the beginning of regular season, but that's about it. Mm-hmm. December, it was Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th. And it was a cold morning, and we were out on the river, and we shot, we shot some golden eyes, which, like I said, that's usually your tail end ducks. Uh-huh. And then here come a pair, and we shot those, both blue wing teal. So we shot your first duck and your last duck in the same hunt in December.
That's
it's just odd.
what would cause that? Can you speculate on that at all?
I don't know if it's, you know, like this year, it's 7 degrees for 2 or 3 days, and then it's, you know, 60 degrees. You know, I don't know if the warm-ups had them back and forth, you know, migrating, then it warms up and they reverse migrate back. But all I know is we probably did those two a favor because they're probably freezing to death.
Right. No doubt.
But yeah, I don't know. I do think that does play with that migration a lot, because you got, they just get confused from warm weather cold weather, and you know, your cold weather, north winds, all that, everything freezing up north is going to push them down. Well, if it just freezes a little above them and then it warms back up, well, why should we just waste our energy, keep going south? We'll just bump back up where we'll have that less of a trip going back north, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, I'm sure it's a variety of things, but I mean, the way our weather is anymore, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I went from every layer in the truck throwing on dang near in a t-shirt 2 days later, you know?
It's been nothing but wild this year. And, you know, deer hunting is probably a little bit more critical than like the waterfowl.
Yeah.
But man, didn't seem like we could string together many days of like same wind.
No, it was all over. And usually when you get getting into these ducks pretty good on a little run, you usually get like, it always seems like you at least get like a 3 day stretch. I mean, it was just one day, get them back to a handful.
Yeah.
Like what happened? Then here comes another random day for no particular reason at all. Get them. Yeah, I mean, that was another thing. If you're a type of guy who watched the weather and says, I'm going to go tomorrow. Now I'm going to sleep in tomorrow. You wouldn't have killed very many ducks this year.
Okay.
You wouldn't have killed very many at all. I always say, if you don't know, if you don't go.
Yeah. Yeah. Pino was just on here. He was talking about that.
Yep. But no, goose numbers, they seem to be pretty good here. Especially, like I said, when it gets cold, you can really take inventory of what's in the area because they all go to that river. Now, mm-hmm. Now it's thawed out. They're kind of spread out again.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, there's a pretty good amount of Canada geese around. And then speckled bellies right now. There's several of those. Snow geese, they're just screwed up as all get out with this weather. They're going north, south, east, west.
Yeah, I've been.
I'm like, it needs to get cold, get you boys south, because I got February and March to deal with you guys.
Right. How often do you guys get into some snows as they're headed south?
Like during the regular season, yeah. You know, we'll kill a few strays or on a foggy or nasty day, you'll catch a group flying a little too low.
Yeah.
But honestly, it's not like we're targeting them this time of year. I mean, snows are the smartest dumb bird I've ever met.
Mm-hmm.
But if we had to mouth call them even in the spring, there'd be a lot there. That would, the population would go up big time.
Yeah.
You aren't mouth. Yeah. But unless you're on an X or something, but
the tundra would be screwed.
Yes. Yes. That's a fact. But no, you get the occasional one here and there, or get one mixed with some Canadas or something. Yeah, I mean, it's not impossible to kill a few, but I think you're allowed 15 or 20 a day, but that's how much confidence I got in one of killing our limit. If one of us shot our limit of snow geese on a duck hunt, we better go buy lottery tickets.
All right. Yeah, well, limit's so high too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as we're talking about the different geese around and moving in, these specks, I'm sure you know better than anybody, but a lot of guys don't even bother calling it a specs.
Yeah. They're probably honestly one of the trickiest ones to fool. I mean, the snow, like we were talking about the snow geese, they're pretty tough mouth calling, but them specs, it's, I've done a lot of research on them over the years. I got a lot of guys down south that hunt them that don't get Canada geese. I mean, we're so used to shooting Canada geese, it's hard to give up and hunt a spec, like strictly spec. But they're a weary bird. They are. But they're a lot of fun. If you can figure it out, it's a lot of fun.
So when you're out on the river and you're hunting, mm-hmm. is it any different hunting a spec than it is if you were on the river bottom?
Honestly, it's on the river, it's kind of a little different than out in the bottoms.
Mm-hmm.
Like black and white silhouettes, we run a lot of those on our sandbar behind us. If we're in the river bottoms, you'll kill a few specks over Canada decoys and with a few specks off to the side, but that you're not just, you know, tearing them up by no means. Mm-hmm. Now out on the river, it seems like you can attract more with, you know, Canada decoys and some spec decoys. Just the main thing, separation. Don't have them. I mean, I'll put my Canadas over here. My specs are going to be clear over here.
Okay.
But like in the river bottoms, but I always say it's such a visual game as far as decoys go. And talking to a lot of guys down south and out west that hunt them. And if here's how I'll put it. If there's snow on the ground, say you're hunting a dry field in the river bottoms. If the snow's on the ground, go with a bunch of Canada decoys and then, you know, separation on your specs. But I think they just see the black mass. There's a feed. Here they come. Now, when there's not snow on the ground and you're just hunting, you know, like your bare field, dirt, corn, beans, whatever, I feel like you, if you want to kill specks good, you have to pick your poison, whether you want to shoot a lot of Canadas or a lot of specks. And what I'm getting at, those decoys don't pop as much when there's no snow, but what does a speck mingle with? They don't mingle a lot with Canadas, but they mingle with snow geese.
Right.
So run a lot of white. When there's no snow on the ground, you can see a snow goose spread 10 miles away.
Right.
And then, but still, I'm going to go back to separation, have your snow goose mass, but definitely set your speck decoys for the wind that day away from them a little bit.
Okay.
And because specks, man, if you really watch them when you're calling and working them, them necks and them heads are just getting a workout. They're looking for who's making the noise. Like, I'll even go as far as I'll have my mass set up upwind.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll go ahead and put a dozen around the pit, because if they're keying on that sound, they're going to be like, okay, who's looking? They're that smart.
Okay.
But if you get like a blizzardy condition or something like that, and they're lost, like any goose, you can have a lot of fun on them too.
Yeah.
they ain't as smart then.
Right.
But there's something else. I mean, if you want weather conditions, though, I mean, like I said, the blizzardy stuff's cool because everything's lost and, you know, they don't know what's going on. But if I want to hunt specks and have full confidence, I'm going to sit in a white spread in a dry field with, like I said, my specks upwind, and it's going to be a sunshine day, a warm day like today was, and a good south wind, especially this time of year, because you're going to catch them migrating back.
Okay.
You're getting new birds, but not only that, they're like snow geese. They like that nice warm weather.
Mm-hmm. And then do you notice, like, as so specks are typically later in the duck season.
Yeah.
Duck and goose season.
They come
before
down.
You get to the late season. Then they're pretty abundant in the late season. Do you notice that you have to call at them any different between, you know, the two periods of time or as the migration changes?
We've done a couple things. There's different instances you'll run into, like today, and I'll say this with every one of them. If you got a three-pack or a single or a pair, I know everybody wants to get their calls out and let her rip, but listen to that speckle belly. If he gives you a yodel, and by a yodel, it's just a lick, and I'll break a call out here in a minute, and we'll go over some stuff. Mimic him.
Mm-hmm.
Give him this. It's almost, it kind of, you know why I like killing specks? Because it's like turkey hunting almost.
Yeah.
But you mimic him, and then just kind of talk back and forth with him. Don't just go 100 mile an hour on a call. I've seen that a lot, and that's when they're like, "Nah, that's a goose call, not a goose."
Right.
But talk to him, and then if he tries to go out away from you like he's leaving, then get on him. And when he comes back, let back off. The groups, and I'm going to say this, if you got a group of guys in the blind, you don't need 10 guys spec calling. You just need two guys to blow clean and crisp. And
okay.
When you're working groups, you might get a little more vocal. And they make little clucking feed sounds. They make some yodel, a lot of them yodels. I mean, hee-hees, a lot of guys will call it. But when there's bigger groups, make more noise. And then ones and twos and stuff, just talk back and forth with them. Like that one today. I got him curious, and it's just like I said with turkeys. We were talking back and forth, and he come back, and I just shut up. I didn't say a word.
Okay.
And he's sitting there going, "Lilik, lilik, lilik." He's getting more aggressive coming, trying to find where I'm at.
Yeah.
And then finally, as he went to slide where he wouldn't be centered up with the blind, I hit him with one little lilik, and he centered back up, and it was game over.
Oh,
so
nice.
It's pretty strategic. Now, I have seen, like I was talking about, when the snow was on, snow's on, you're running more Canada decoys. Yeah, they're looking, they'll see some spec decoys, but they're seeing the Canadas. I have seen where if they're not reacting to a spec call, get the whole blind honker calling, and one guy who can blow a spec call clean and crisp, just have him spec call, have them guys honker call, and they'll come into that too.
That's...
They're like I said, In one instance, you're doing exactly something I told you not to do in the other instance.
That's Mother Nature. That's the way it goes.
That's why they're turning into the new goose, and there's so many of them. They're smart.
Yeah.
A cloudy, no wind day, like a hazy, you know, stale day, that is a rough day.
All right.
I'm not telling you to sky bust, but if you get them down to shooting any kind of shooting range where you feel comfortable, and that you better take your shot.
Yeah, no one more pass on those.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's my experience is very limited, but most of the specs that we've killed was when we were honker hunting.
Yep.
And they came in and it was just off of we scratched a few specs out.
Yep.
But that being my experience, whenever I've gone, and so many times people don't want to call it specs.
Yeah, yeah.
And every time, I'm like, well, where's coal foils when I need it?
and I get it. If they're little dots in the next universe in a V flying south or north, whatever, I get it. They're probably not going to hear you. But, I mean, there's been a lot of times, though, you hit a note and just kind of a Hail Mary, you know, and here comes one or two.
right. But you got to blow on it. Uh-huh. Whether you pull a honker call out.
And a lot of guys, I don't think they got that because they're not reacting like a Canada goose does as easy. They don't have that confidence.
Exactly.
And it's just like anything. At some point, you barely knew how to blow a Canada goose call, but you had to try.
I feel like it's a progression of a waterfowl hunter.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. This area has been so... Our whole lives has been so based around a Canada goose, and you still want to kill Canada geese this time of year. But like I said, there's a lot of instances. If you want to shoot a spec good, you kind of got to pick your poison. Now I'm guilty of it too. Like I was saying, on the bare ground, you put your Canadas and a few specs, like, you will get a couple, but consistently kill them day in, day out, you're not gonna. Mm-hmm. But we got so much pride in a Canada goose, so it's hard to give it up. But if you got a spot, you can just, you know, devote to spec hunting, do it.
Yeah.
Give it a try. You know, that sunny, warm day, you're not really expecting this. It's been, you know, warm for a few days and you're not expecting to see many honkers. Go to the spec pit, you know. Mm-hmm. And like going back to guys that aren't real confident blowing a spec call, or if you haven't blown a spec call and you're looking into it, I mean, I can do a little tutorial real quick on your basics.
Let's do a quick break. We're going to come back and
we'll do that tutorial.
Yes.
Sounds good.
All right. Sounds good. Welcome back to the WJBM Outdoor Show, brought to you by Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville. We're coming to you from the WJBM studios in Jerseyville, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I'm Aaron Quillen. I operate Monarch Rivers, where the mission is simple. Kill big deer. Coal foils, world champion, caller, overall goose legend, waterfowling legend, and just a good guy. We were talking before the break about some of the challenges and almost like the, you know,
we're in deep with spec hunting right now.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, it's like my experience is, we've scratched a few out hunting flooded areas, mostly honker hunting, and then kill some specs. And I've been back out there with guys and they
just don't even want to deal with
them. Yeah, they're specs. I'm not even going to call at them. And it's like, but they fly, and it's legal to shoot them. Let's try.
Yeah, a lot of guys look at them how we look at snow geese this time of year. But you can't. I'm telling you, they're about the new goose anymore, and you need to learn how to shoot a few of them, call decoy a few of them.
Yeah, so what?
We were talking about decoy placement earlier and just different instances and calling, but we were also talking about, like, these guys that don't have that confidence. If you're listening to this and you're trying to get better, or you just want to learn, I'm going to do a basic tutorial on spec calling, and we can get right into that.
Let's do it.
All right. So I'll grab my lanyard here. So on a spec call, there's a couple notes. There's not a lot of notes to it, but you can put voice inflection and sound like different ones. But with a spec call, a lot of it's to break over and get your notes. Everybody thinks with a honker call so much with how your air hits, but it's really hand placement. And what I'm going to tell you is I'm not going to tell a guy to completely choke your call off.
Yeah.
But you're going to cover it three quarters till you find that spot where it breaks. So
okay.
I'm not closing it, but I'm three quarters of the way. I always tell people envision like you get pulled over at night and that cop's shining a flashlight in your window.
Ah.
Think of that. Like think about gripping a mag light.
Okay.
So, and then this hand, your other hand's just going to float over. Your air is just like a Canada Goose call. You're not cheek puffing it. You're just straight air like you're cleaning your glasses. But you're going to, for a basic yodel, your cadence is like a heartbeat.
Okay.
But your air presentation, think of somebody punching you in the stomach.
Ooh, okay.
Hear the heartbeat, but yeah. but how your air is presented. So here we'll hit one. And if you want to sound like a couple, then we'll get into voice inflection. Change your voice. It's also like a coffin. Like a
yeah.
And then there's what I'll do a lot, and you'll hear Specs do it a lot. They do doubles, but they'll also do triple yodels. And that's just... So that's like your key. I mean, it's not a lot, but that's how you're going to do your yodels. But not, but a lot, so much of it's just hand placement.
Okay.
Guys will think of honker calling and open and close it. Now, this is my hand closed. Watch when I try to open it. I can't break nothing. So watch. You find where your exhaust needs to be adjusted.
Okay.
And then when Specs are feeding or just comfortable, they'll do a clucking noise a lot. And if you guys who blow Canada Goose calls, when you blow into it, you're going, it, I'm going to blow Canada Goose real quick. That's just your basic cluck. It's the same thing in a spec call, but push your air a little harder. Instead of it, go it, like you're mad at it. So that's you, and honestly, that's your two notes. But if you play with that call and you get your little routine put together, you get your, you know, your muscle memory, your hand placement down, everything, you can put something together. And this is just kind of what you'll hear me on a usual. Say we got a big group flying by and I'm trying to get their attention. So that's kind of your spec call. But like I said, you get them small groups or them singles or pairs. If he goes, you better go. Just mimic him. But that's kind of your basics on some spec tutorials or on your spec calling, I mean.
I appreciate it. I hope everybody out there does too, because man, it just seems like a constant theme.
Uh-huh.
That Specs challenge crap out of everybody.
Yeah, and if you know, everybody's got a phone now, so if you need to take this past the radio or the show, get on Rock Dog Retriever's TikTok.
Okay.
And look up spec calling tutorial. I got videos out there, guys. You can watch that over and over.
Awesome. All right, so we've got the late season goose mm-hmm. going on, and that's going to go through January
31st.
Yeah. Yep. Any predictions for the upcoming late goose season?
I just hope it's a really good one, man. I hunt everything, but if I kill one Canada goose in a hunt, that's equivalent to a limit of ducks to me. It's a good day when you kill a goose, man, especially a Canada. I love it. For starting out here, it's looking a little warm, but you know what? We got the Christmas and the holidays, and everybody's putting their duck decoys and stuff away. Get all your work done before you worry too much, unless you got a hot spot scouted out. But it looks like next week things might start cooling off, and if it stays that way, they're going to – oh, and we get a few north winds and – hopefully a few more geese show up, but there ain't a bad amount around right now. We'll move around a little on the river till it freezes, hunt mm-hmm. some water, do some scouting, find some spots. But you've hunted it several times with me, whether it's been Canada geese or snows. My dry pit, I think about that spot all year long. So I'm looking forward to getting the black hole set up and seeing what happens.
Yeah,
we've had a lot of good times out there. A lot of Canada geese have come to their last flight out there.
Right? Yeah. So something I'm always curious about is, you know, like this year, there were some changes to the waterfowl season, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What
for you talking about for the future?
Yeah.
Yeah, next 5 years.
Yeah. What were some of the changes that were made this season that you know, kind of stand out to you?
For you talking about what they're gonna do, Illinois, I mean, far as long as I've been duck hunting anyway, we've never had a split season like a lot of states. So what they're doing is they're gonna have a split. So mid season, I think it closes for 6 days.
Okay.
Five to 7 days, we'll just say that. And then we're gonna open back up and go into like January 2nd. And then each year's kind of the dates are a little different, but they're gonna try split seasons for 5 years, see how it goes. We'll see. I'm not completely against it, but I'm not honestly 100% for it. Like I said, this is all my opinion. I mean, we all got our own, but the one change, if we're gonna do it, if I was in charge, let's just say. And I wanted to make everybody happy, but hopefully see some good results out of the deal. What I would do for a split season is I would start the season a little earlier than it's going to start.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we're going to have a split, let's have a split. Let's, instead of 5 or 6 days, let's close it for 10, 12, 14 days and then go into the late half. And I'd probably run it like 35 and then run to rest after that. But what I'm doing is, by my opinion, how I think I would do it is you'd get the early flight of ducks we usually miss, and if there's anything late, we're going to get them too. But also with a longer split than we're having, I feel like them ducks would have, the ones that are around would have more time to get that pressure off their back, take that weight off their shoulders. And when you went back into that second half, it would truly feel like an opening day again.
Okay.
But, and then you got guys that argue this. I want an earlier season. I want season to start earlier. I want season to start later. Well, if you do that, you make everybody happy. You know, everybody's going to get their taste of what they wanted.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, run it 60 straight, run a split. I don't really care. I know guys are freaking out on the split, that especially state areas, that if we get cold weather, what if it freezes and I can't get back out there? Well, I mean, it is what it is, but start goose hunting, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. But
find a buddy with an ice eater.
Right.
But like me being a river guy and stuff, I mean, I'm sure we're going to be fine, you know. But,
yeah.
But that's my opinion if I was running it. But I'm not completely for it. I'm not completely against it. But here's the thing, guys. Anybody's listening that says a duck hunter, at the end of the day, no matter what they do, you're going to go. And you're a liar if you tell me you're not. Right. You're going to give it a whirl.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's what we're going to deal with for 5 years. The one thing I didn't like, and it has nothing to do with our zone, is the South Zone.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't think that over too good when they did that split. So when they announced the dates, the South Zone, they made their entire split is when all the kids' Christmas break is. So imagine being a kid getting on Christmas break, and the whole time you're on Christmas break, you can't go duck hunting.
Oh, no.
So I think there's some guys trying to fight it and get some dates moved around. I don't know if they'll get it done or if they have or ain't. But, yeah, last I seen it, I was like, that's a bummer.
Yeah, that is a bummer.
But
especially 5 years. Imagine going into
kid's gonna go all the way through high school and not even be able to duck hunt, you know. But or during his breaks, you know. But I don't know, maybe they'll fight for it and get it changed where they can. I don't know. That's our future, guys. We got to take care of them.
right, no doubt. Have you seen any data that's been presented with regard to why they made the split or made any changes to the waterfowl season?
I haven't seen a lot, and I should go to more of these migratory meetings and stuff like that. I just kind of do my thing, but I haven't really looked up a whole lot about it. I just seen these dates, and like I said, I had my opinion on it. You know,
yeah, I feel like if you're not a member of migrators or migratory waterfowl or a special interest group, if you're not mm-hmm. paying a membership and receiving any type of notification, I didn't even know the meetings were taking place until the day of.
And I know my dad, he's been kind of speaking at a few of them and stuff, and I don't know, maybe I need to ask him about it, but when it comes to stuff like that or politics or something, you got me lost. I'm just out there to enjoy the day.
but I see data on Facebook or Instagram showing, you know, they show a bird migration. If you mm-hmm. look at some of these weather apps, you know, I know Michigan Storm Chasers mm-hmm. shows Midwestern migration of birds.
Oh, okay. Which isn't going to be all, that's neat.
Yeah, I think I've sent it to you in Messenger. But I always thought that was kind of cool. It doesn't really break down to species.
See, we don't have nothing like that. The only thing we really got as far as like bird counts or migration is they fly the refuges and kind of give you a halfway count of what's around.
Right. And then I've seen some other like Instagram stuff.
Yeah.
And it looks like the pattern still seems to be consistent over the past few years since I've been paying attention to it, where the migration is flying over the area. That doesn't account for how much ground a bird can cover in one flight or anything like that. But you know, I really just don't see much produced from Illinois.
No.
You know, and you got a lot of people complaining about, you know, well, a lot of the birds tend to fly over west of the river, over Missouri and stuff like that. But when I look at the actual flight patterns of however they're doing it, whether it be weather radar, it still seems like a consistent flight.
Yeah. And, you know, a guy'd probably be surprised if he knew how many ducks migrated on a full moon or of a night anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, things we got going these days, the technology's there now, what wasn't there, the amount of hunters, there's so many more now. And maybe that number's off. But, I mean, people are, whether you think they're good or not, because of the equipment we got and everything else, people are just better hunters now.
Yeah.
And that creates a lot of pressure on duck amongst a lot of things. There's just a lot of crap that goes into it, why a duck ain't being a duck anymore, you know, I mean, there's the flooded corn arguments and all that. And I'd like to see if they ever got that, you know, where you couldn't flood a crop for a while, just to see what happens. We're doing a 5-year split. Let's do a 5-year. There's no crops, you know, and just see what happens. See if a duck has to go dry feed again or, you know, go find spots, find shelter, you know, whatever. But like I said, I'm not going to get into that and say like, oh, ban it for life or anything like that. Cause I mean, that's how a lot of guys hunt too. So I think, you know, there's times I think food like that, because some guys aren't fortunate to own ground to do stuff like that. I mean, it probably buys us good hunts and then it hurts us some too. But like I said, between that pressure, a lot of things, you know.
I just like to see somebody like
temperature change, the state like we talk,
come out and say, hey, here's the data.
Yeah. Yeah.
Make it very, easy to find, easy to digest.
I know. And I haven't really looked at numbers or nothing too, but like I said, again, in my opinion, of just hunting every day and talking to other people up and down the flyway, it just seems like the mallard, like as far as the mallard duck goes, and I'm not a mallard purist, so you give me 5 ringnecks, I'll shoot those. I don't care.
Right.
My green-winged teal is my favorite duck to shoot. It's just like the mallards aren't there anymore like they used to be.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll have some days, but it's just like they ain't as thick as they used to be. I don't know if that's, you know, if it's up or down. Like I said, show me the data.
Right. Well, I think they're still shooting them in Canada.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. What was that? 2 years ago, I seen a Christmas post up there. A bunch of guys wearing Santa hats, holding limits of green hats. I think they're in Canada still.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, man, I'm glad you had a great season.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming in. And
yeah, always a pleasure.
So thanks again for coming in, and we appreciate you.
Yeah, good seeing you, bud.